Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors, Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning and welcome to Money Matters, live on WSB Radio, live also on KRMG Radio in Tulsa, and I wish you good morning. This is your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, and to take your calls and questions, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. And there's a lot going on in the world, of course. One of my quotes of the week, favorite, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon, you're talking about real money. So we had quite a week. Of course, the highlight, I don't know if it's a highlight, maybe it's a low light. It's hard to categorize this one. I typically like to look at economic reports, market activity in either a positive or negative category. I call it highlights, low lights. And I'm trying to synthesize the data in any given week so that we can stay on track. So long term, that's what we're all trying to do, is we're trying to not let the daily noise and the news get us off track, because that's what this will do. A market like today, so here we are, jobs report, a great example. Light jobs report on Friday. Call it a B-minus, C-plus jobs report. We're expecting 200,000 jobs. What did we get? We got 142,000. So it was almost 60,000 less than economists, mostly wrong typically, expected. And then we revised the prior 2 months down 59,000. So good morning, welcome to Money Matters. What are we typically doing here? We're trying to put all of this into context and figure out what it means for you. So what does this mean for you? Does it matter that we just only added 142,000 jobs and we revised down 59,000 the prior 2 months? Does this matter to you? Is it going to kill your retirement? Is it going to ruin your portfolio? Is it going to delay when you can stop working? Is it going to mean your kids don't go to college? Is it going to mean that you can't pay for private school? What does it mean? And that's what we try to figure out here, and we try to keep you on track to figure out if this is something that you need to react to or not. Remember, we're not supposed to react to every single headline. If we did, we'd be twisting around like a dog chasing our tail in orbit with no gravity, which would be, think about how complicated that sounds, just a mess. And that's we don't want to end up in that situation. So we've got to figure out what this really means. If the impact is going to be something legendarily difficult or bad, like 2007, then you do need to wake up and do something. And if it's going to be a great bear market, a great recession, something that is legendarily impactful to the bad, to the downside, then yes, I think you got to get ready. You got to put your armor on. You got to pick up your sword and you got to figure out what you're doing. That's not where we are right now, at least not yet and not right now, because the media is going to make a huge deal out of this terrible jobs report. Well, we only added 142,000. That means the Fed's not going to do anything because the economy's not strong enough to handle interest rates going high. Remember that debate, another uncertainty cloud that lays upon the market, at least this year. Market's going virtually nowhere. In fact, still decidedly net negative because we can't get this cloud of Fed indecision away. We have this tremendous year of commodity prices that have effectively crashed. Oil. Not just oil, but metal prices, iron ore, copper, palladium, platinum, silver, gold, for the most part, decidedly negative. In fact, so much so that Glencore, which is the largest mining company on the planet, lost almost 30% of their stock value just one day this week in the worry and thought that they're going to go out of business because they can't handle these persistently low and dramatic commodity prices that have been hit so hard. So all of this news scares everyone, and it makes you very, very nervous to be an investor. And that's part of the game. And it's what we're going to do here today is put that in context. So let's talk about this jobs report. So we have, again, we added, again, not a terrible jobs report, a not so wonderfully, not an amazingly good jobs report, but call it a B minus, call it a C plus. We'll give it a C plus. We're still adding jobs, 142,000 of them. Average hourly earnings, relatively flat. So that's not great. That's not terrible. The workforce shrank. And labor force participation is the lowest we've seen since 1977. It's almost hard to believe. But again, this has been a structural labor force decline for almost a decade. It's not something that's just happened yesterday. There are baby boomers that continue to retire, thousands of them every single day. Part of the reason we see the labor force being reduced. A big chunk of that is demographics. So because that labor force participation came down, unemployment rate stayed at 5.1%. The U6 continues to trend down. The underemployment rate actually continues to come down. So we have this light jobs report. That means another Fed rain delay. That's how maybe it's because the weather's been overcast and rainy, at least in Atlanta, for as long as I can remember here for a while. But every time we're about to go back onto the field, and we've been waiting, hey, maybe we're about ready to go back out on the field, then we get a little rumble of thunder. Then we got to wait another half hour. Then we're ready to go back onto the field. Another rumble of thunder. Another rain delay. And that's exactly what's been happening with this Fed. Every time we are about to, it looks like the economy's in the position that they can go ahead and just start normalizing interest rates, because there shouldn't be at zero. Money shouldn't have zero borrowing costs, which effectively is what it is today. Shouldn't be at zero. That's unnatural. It's unprecedented. It's never really happened, particularly for this long period of time. But we're just trying to normalize it. Every time we're about to normalize, boom, another little rumble of thunder. The rumble on Friday, we only added 142,000 jobs. That's not good enough. So now we got to wait again. So Fed fund futures, that's actually a market indicator that says, hey, this is when we think the Fed is going to start raising rates. Now, not till March is the next caller consensus on Wall Street. Now, what did it mean though for your portfolio this week? Well, IRSA's interest rate sensitive areas, because of the Friday job weakness or lack of strength is a better way to put that. Because of that, we saw the 10-year treasury tick down again. Now, back to 2% or even slightly below 2% on the 10-year treasury. That means that on Friday, in particular, the day of Friday, we started down 200 points on the down, finished up 200 points. It's a 400-point swing. So the market started to look back, and which is not the way I like to see this. The bad news in the economy is good news for the market. That doesn't last for long. So bad news meaning that, hey, the economy's not that strong. That means the Fed's going to keep rates low. That means, hey, stocks are the only place to be. So they go up. But interest rate sensitive areas had a particularly good day. So bonds actually had a very good day. LQD, corporate bond index, it's been under a little bit of pressure lately, up almost 0.5%. Vanguard total bond market ETF, that's government and mostly government and some corporate bonds, up about 0.4 for the day. REITs, Vanguard's VNQ ETF, REIT index or ETF, up 0.75%. Utilities, up 1.3% for the day. These are just daily numbers. So we have this pause in rates. Rates stay low. Good for interest rate sensitive areas. So that's why all these categories had a kind of a tailwind. Now, year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 7.5% for 2015. So it hasn't been a good year. But it's not just the broad market. It's not just the Dow. The S&P 500 is down 5.5%. But there are plenty of other areas that haven't done all that well either. So MLP is down 28% year to date. Those are the big pipeline companies. In general, I'm looking at MLPI, which is an index for many of the big MLP companies, down 28% year to date. But we're getting into that zone where there's just so much movement within the industry that it's not, there's obviously not a fundamental, there's the market is searching for some sort of fundamental level to equilibrium, because yes, we're down 28% for the year, but we had a 16% rally between Wednesday and Friday for MLPs broadly. MLPs didn't get 16% more valuable in 3 days. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It doesn't just go up by 16% in 3 days because fundamentals got 16% better. This is a classic example of the market prices being detached with the fundamental value of companies. And we're just searching for equilibrium. MLPs were down 15% earlier in the week. Now they're up 16% in just 3 days. That's a market that is just trying to get in line with fundamentals. There's this tremendous amount of activity happening. Energy Transfer Equity, ETE, buying Williams companies, Tulsa-based. If you live in Tulsa, you know about ETE and you know about Williams. And Energy Transfer Equity is buying Williams for $37 billion. So there's a lot happening in this space. And it trickles down to all these other areas throughout the market. Year to date, Eurostock 50, FEZ, F-E-Z, is an ETF that I look at, down 7% for the year. Emerging markets, VWO, Vanguard Emerging Market ETF, down 15%. Small and mid companies, down 5 to 6% for the year. So we've had this most equity-based, stock-based areas, large, small, U.S., international, not having a great year. But the safety side of your portfolio, it's not making you money. The bond side isn't making you a lot of money, but it's not losing. So BND, flat price-wise on the year, about 2% in dividends so far. So you're up about 1.5% to 2% on the year for Vanguard Total Bond. LQD, down about 2.5% in price for the year, but it's paid out close to 3%. So it's up about 0.5% for the year. So nothing magical here, but at least that side of the income portfolio is holding steady. And that, in combination with these higher volatility areas like stocks, US, international, emerging markets, that combination is the important part to make sure you have and understand that that gives you, that balance allows you to ride through these not so pleasant periods of time that we're in today. Markets that are flat to down almost across the board, they're not as fun. They're not as pleasant to be around. But and they're trying to test your patience, and this market will test your patience, and it might happen for a very long time, likely longer than you'd like it to. Don't let it break you. Don't let it wrestle you into submission. You win when you're there for the upside. If you hop in and out, then you miss the recovery, and all of your patience and will is for nothing. So don't let that happen to you. All right, more of this straight ahead. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss.
Back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters on a Sunday morning here. In a week where we finally closed out the third quarter, which is an ugly quarter. It was down almost 7% for the S&P 500. Just in one quarter. That is the worst quarter we have had in 4 years. Dow down 7.6%. S&P down almost 7%. It's just been a long week. Another horrific shooting in Umpqua College in Oregon. 10 people died, more wounded. Glencore, global mining giant, down almost 30% in one day. So the world and the volatility and the scariness of where we live doesn't ever change. It never goes away. If anything, it just continues to get worse. I don't know if the world's worse or it's scarier or it's just that we're more efficient in reporting things today. And you listen to shooting. I was listening to some of the interviews the next day or the next morning about how these individuals are hiding under desks. There's a mother who hid under a desk for an hour while the shooting was going on, and there's chaos running around her, and they're right outside of the door of the library, and she's under a cubby. She's got 3 kids. She's got a husband. He's texting her. It's just a scary world that we live in, and it's not getting any less scary. And the stock market's certainly not doing anything to calm our fears either. So volatility, more volatility ahead. Nothing immediately is going to make this market jump up and down and celebrate. There's too many clouds right now, but that calls for patience over the next quarter, the fourth quarter of 2015, as we work our way out of this. All right, listen, you are listening to Money Matters, folks, on a Marconi Award-winning radio station. WSB won Station of the Year, by the way, in the nation, which would make it really in the planet. So that's WSB here in Atlanta. Congratulations. to Pete Spriggs, program director here, WSB in Atlanta. Also, KRMG in Tulsa, both winners, WSB and KRMG, in their categories of the National Recognition of Excellence in Broadcasting. That's the Academy Award, folks, for radio. Also, big congratulations to KRMG's Dan Potter, also a Marconi winner.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. Live on WSB Radio in Atlanta and KRMG in Tulsa. The economic data that continues to come out here is not terrible. We get this jobs report and the whole world says, you know, we're coming to a screeching halt. We added 142,000 jobs for the month of September. The unemployment rate in America today is only 5.1%. Yeah, there's labor force participation issues, and you can make that the case that people are dropping out of the labor force, and that's bringing the number of unemployment down because you have less people actually looking for jobs. And if you're not looking, you're not unemployed. So it brings the numbers down. It's a game of, it's a little bit of a shell game, and you can make a case for that. But we also have a natural decline in the labor force because our population is getting older. People are retiring. I wrote a book about it. It's called You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. And there's a lot of people out there that are doing that. Many more than I would have ever thought, quite frankly. When I wrote You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, I really was thinking in my mind, retirement at 62. That's early. Just to be able to retire at 65 or 66 is a small miracle in America. A small fraction of the population can even do that. Now, granted, if you can just live on Social Security, which the vast majority of people end up doing, then you could say, okay, well, anybody can retire. But to retire with a little bit of leeway and a little bit of cushion, you've got to have done a lot of things right financially over a very long period of time. It's a marathon of doing things right. Paying off a mortgage by the time you're ready to retire. Saving I go back to my $1,000 a month rule, $240,000 for every $1,000 per month that you'd like to be able to use in retirement. And that's if you're in that rule of thumb, $1,000 a month rule, that applies to somebody who retires at a relatively normal retirement age to slightly early. 62 is pretty darn early. 60 is getting to be real early. But what Retire Sooner Than You Think has taught me, the book, there are a lot of people out there retiring at 55. They're retiring at 50. A lot of the calls I do with families around America, whether it's coming from Seattle or Texas or all these towns in California that I've never heard from, or Connecticut or North Carolina or West Virginia or Florida, the calls that I have are people that are in their earlier 50s, and they're saying, Wes, I read this book about retire sooner than you think. I picked it up because I'm really ready to retire sooner than I ever thought. I'm not going to do a new book that says retire sooner than you think, but I have learned a lot in the last year and a half to 2 years since the book has been complete. And the addendum that I would put onto my original thesis here, which was retire at 60, 62, that's pretty darn early, particularly in America. But again, most people can't retire ever comfortably. The addendum to getting into your 50s is that you don't want to use the 5% rule. It's too aggressive if you're that young. 5% a year, I can live with and I can make a case for if you're in your 60s already. But if you're going to retire at 55, you can't rely a full 5% withdrawal rate on your portfolio. It's too much too soon. You're revving the engine too high too early. You got to back that off to the 3.5% range. Maybe 4 at the most if you're going to start using your money that you've saved in your 50s. What is more impactful and more important and the solution for super early retirees is part-time work. So if you can be diligent in saving your 30s, 40s, and early 50s, and you get a nest egg that has some momentum, then the key there is letting it continue to compound and have its own momentum and not touching it for a while. So if you're making $100,000 a year and you're semi-retiring, you don't have to continue to make $100,000 or $200,000 a year and continue to save. You just have to make enough just to cover spending. You don't necessarily have to continue to save. If you want to retire really, really early, there's that semi-retirement phase that is so important. The semi-retirement phase is really all about just trying not to dip into your principal yet. So it's a part-time job for $40,000 a year or $30,000 a year. You don't have to make your full peak earnings anymore if that's the path that you're trying to look at, but you do, in many cases, in many families that I've counseled over this last year from all over the nation, it's about not dipping in just yet and delaying when you need to start dipping into your principal and utilizing at a lower ebb for your withdrawal rate. Again, the $1,000 a month rule is pretty simple. And again, it applies to those who are in a more normal retirement age to slightly early. That's pretty simple. To every $240,000 you save, 5% a year, that's $12,000 per year or $1,000 a month. And it's a great way and a great rule of thumb in you're doing your planning to get yourself onto some sort of goal and know that, hey, I've got $240,000. Hey, that's $1,000 a month when I finally retire for life over time. I'm at $480,000. Now that's $2,000. Now I'm at $720,000. That's $3,000 on top of a pension. If you're lucky or smart enough to have one of those, and there's still plenty of people in America that have pensions, that is becoming more and more rare, but there are still millions of people in America that have some sort of pension. They're not as rich as they used to be, and there are fewer of them than there used to be, but they're still out there. And then, of course, Social Security. And then, of course, the question is, how do you take your Social Security? Because these are all these different income sources that are there to layer upon each other, or they're tributaries that run into one big stream of income. So I've got this small tributary of a pension. Maybe it's only $500 a month because I worked at a telephone company X amount of years ago. And then I have my investment income, that's another tributary. That's maybe $2,000 or $3,000 a month because I've saved a lot. And then I have my Social Security. That's another tributary. That's $1,800 a month. And oh, my wife has Social Security as well. And that's another $1,600 a month. And none of them in their own right are that legendary or that powerful. But you put all those tributaries together. Now I've got a whole river. I've got a whole stream of income that will take me into my 80s and my 90s. And that's the key here. Very rarely do I see just one big chunk of income that satisfies retirement for families. It's the combination of all these small areas. Maybe it's also part-time work. Again, hey, well, I'm going to kind of retire at 62, but I'm going to part-time work till 66. Again, so I don't have to dip in to my principal just yet. Or I have accumulated one or two rental properties over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years. I've got this house. It's worth $100,000. I get $900 a month in rent. It's almost paid off. Well, now that's positive cash flow. It's another tributary that runs in the big stream of income. So very rarely is there just one perfect singular solution to generating enough retirement income that you can live on. It's very often this combination of three or four or five or six different income streams. And going back to the research for you can retire sooner than you think, there is a direct correlation. The greater the number of income sources, different income sources, the greater level of happiness in retirement. So it's not just about the level of income, it's the diversification of how you're getting the income, because God forbid if one of those tributaries gets cut off or dries up. The key here is that you've got all these different areas, they run together, they accumulate together, and they create this wonderfully strong foundation so that you can count on that income. And that leads to, and that goes back to, is it really happiness in the book? Well, part of it is, but a lot of that has to do with the stability of not having to worry about where my next paycheck next month is coming from. I eliminate that worry and that anxiety of where my future income is going to be, then I can go back to the things that I want to do. And then go back to worrying about the discretionary spend on the things I want to do. And it might very well be travel. And it might be travel for pleasure or sightseeing or exercise. I might be going to Italy not to go sightsee. I might be going to ride my bike around wine country. I don't know what it is for you. I might be going to Europe, not for a museum tour, but to go run with the bulls. I don't know. I would never do that. But I might be going on one of these Viking River cruises. That seems to be getting more and more popular. I don't know what it is, but it allows you to have that money for discretion. Maybe it's going to go to my grandkids. Maybe it's going to your grandchildren, and it's you being able to have and afford to help out your kids and your grandkids pay for private school. I don't know what that number is, but that's why having the utility of all the different income streams, once you're covered, all of your discretionary becomes that much easier. And that's the whole point of what we're talking about. Speaking of telephone companies, I don't know how I got back to telecom or telephone, but this is, as I change gears here for a second, this is kind of funny to me. And again, this is more of a Clark Howard issue. I'm sure he'll probably talk about this, or probably already has. But in reading about the iPhone S and what Sprint's doing here, and there are all these telephone companies or these wireless carriers are doing something similar to this. But it's amazing to me how they are structuring these deals for consumers and for you would be out here. So cell phones, the whole cell phone industry or smartphone industry is looking more and more like the used car market. So you've got Sprint has this new deal. It's a $1 deal. $1, and you can get a brand new iPhone S, 6S, the Mac Daddy iPhone, right? It's only $1. Oh, it's $1. Okay. Well, what's the fine print? So in order to get a brand new 6S, here's what you have to do with Sprint. You got to trade in your old 6, which those are barely a year old, by the way. Mine still looks brand new. And that evidently has a trade-in value. Again, this is just like used cars. Of $325. And then you have a $1 a month lease for 21 months. Again, this is the way I read it. So that's another 21 bucks. And then at the end of the contract, you got to pay $187 for the phone. It's like saying, oh, I'm going to lease you this car for free. You have 36 months for free. Here's a Maserati. It's free for 36 months. And then at the end, so every month it's 50 cents a month. In the end, you owe me $87,000. But it's basically a free lease. I don't really know how they're doing this, but it's just they're trying. It seems as though it's a game of skullduggery. Maybe, I don't know if it's smoke and mirrors, but it's just another way to bury the impact of the upfront cost. But if you add everything up, $325 for the used phone trade-in, 21 bucks a month, or 21 months of a dollar, and then 187 at the end, that's still $533. So at the end of the day, they're still getting money out of you, plus the cost of the data plan. Either way you skin the cat, these iPhones aren't free. You got to pay for them one way or another. And this sounds like a great, I'm sure Clark's already written about this, or probably will write about this, but pretty amazing how creative these companies are getting about how you can pay / lease a smartphone in a very complicated world that we live in. All right, so you are listening to Money Matters. By the way, if you don't already know this, Money Matters, or not Money Matters, our station, WSB Radio, had a gigantic week winning the Marconi Award. So the winning radio station of the year in 2015, pretty amazing, pretty powerful stuff. That's WSB Radio in Atlanta. And KRMG, by the way, in Tulsa. They're both winners in categories of national recognition of excellence in broadcasting. It's really like the Academy Awards for radio. It's a very big deal. Congratulations to KRMG's Dan Potter and, of course, Pete Spriggs here at WSB Radio in Atlanta. Straight ahead, more Money Matters right here with me, Wes Moss.
Had me down.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Wes Moss right here on WSB Radio in Atlanta. Now also on KRMG Radio in Tulsa. Good morning. There's a lot obviously happening this week. Even though the market last week was up about 1% in one of these bad news, good news scenarios, which I don't love, meaning that I'd rather good news eventually lead to good news. Bad news is good news means that the economic numbers were a little weak on the jobs report, and everyone thinks now, or the market thinks, that the Fed's going to wait to raise rates. And we just continue to be in this cycle like a dog chasing its tail in a world where we end up doing nothing and there's a blanket over the market until there's some decision out of the Fed. But in the meantime, some other economic numbers came out. Real disposable income, which is different than average hourly, was up 3.2% in August year over year. The Conference Board consumer sentiment or confidence rose in September, and that's despite all the bad things happening around the world. September ADP private payrolls were up 200,000 month over month. That's different than the jobs report. So ADP is slightly different than the BLS number, Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is 142,000. And then mortgage applications for purchase up 20% year over year. Not to mention 18.17 million vehicle run rate for U.S. auto sales. That's the back on track to be the best year in 15 years since 2000, the year 2000. Oh, and we have no government shutdown, at least now through mid-December. So there are plenty of good things happening in this economy. That, again, that's why you've got to look at the totality of economic data points, not just singular points. It's not just the BLS jobs report. There are lots of different job reports, and then there's lots of data beneath the job reports when it comes to how we measure earnings, how long people are working, is the work week expanding, are we making more or less? So there's plenty to look at, and the totality of economic numbers still point to a B. Not a B minus, not a B plus. We're right around a B for the economy, and that's okay for now. We're not headed off the edge of a cliff, and we've just got to be patient here in this market, because this market will test your patience. It's going to do that, and it's going to do it for a while, probably longer than you wanted to. So don't let the market in this pattern that has been a frustrating year, don't let it break you. Don't let it wrestle you into submission. You win when you're there for the upside. And if you hop in and out and you're trying to time this market, you're going to miss a recovery when it comes. So all your patience will be for nothing. Don't let that happen to you. We've got to own quality companies. We've got to look at the income for our overall portfolio. We've got to have confidence that in that balance and be patient. So with that, enjoy the rest of this Sunday. We will be back here next Sunday. This is Wes Moss. You're listening to Money Matters right here.